you ever seen a submarine movie?
Oh my God. Operation Petticoat, Das Boot, The Enemy Below, Run Silent, Run Deep, Gray Lady Down.
Ooh, Yellow Submarine.
Yellow Submarine, yes. Well, there's so many submarine movies.
Who else reads books about submarines?
My dad.
Yeah.
History is strange. It's alien. And it won't give us what we would like to have.
Hour 3 of a Tuesday morning on the 9th of April, 2024, means Dave Does History on Bill Mick Live. Dave Bowman been with us throughout the morning. He's going to take us for a dive into history, a literal dive this time, as we're talking submarines and the like. Dave, looking forward to this. Before we jump into that, though, you will be absent most likely for the rest of the month on our Tuesdays. You've got some events coming up that are going to sideline you for a period of time.
Yeah, I'm having a replacement of my knee replacement scheduled for Friday. I'm hoping it comes off. So it will keep me out. And the problem is my office is upstairs. My studio is upstairs.
Uh-huh.
And I may not be able to get here for a little while. Plus, I will be medicated, which will make me kind of a lethargic dull.
Oh, we can have fun with that. If only we could get you up the stairs. We need to get you one of those chairs that you sit in. It takes you up the stairs and lets you navigate around. That would do it.
We've talked about that, but it just costs too much money and I'm too cheap. So
certainly wish you the best with that. I know you've had knee problems since before I've known you.
I injured my knee while I was on the submarine and degenerated. I've been through 7 knee surgeries, and they are ripping out the previous knee replacement, which is only 8 years old and has completely failed, come completely disconnected on both ends. And so they're going to take the whole thing out.
Is it a mechanical problem or is it a Dave's body problem?
I have a lot of opinions about that, but I should probably keep them to myself so that I don't get sued for libel.
So your words aren't used against you in litigation down the road. That would be a good idea.
Yeah.
Anyway, we wish you the best on that, and we'll be in touch throughout. If you need anything, let us know. We'll send you a gator tail or something to enjoy during the recovery period.
Woohoo!
Yeah, there you go. What are we doing today?
The ocean, Bill, is a dangerous place, and this is something I have said to my audience from day one. I have always said that the ocean is trying to kill you. And if you let your guard down, even for a second, it will kill you, and it will do so mercilessly and probably painfully, which is even scary enough. But when you start talking about people going to sea, then it gets a little more scary at that point. And when you talk about going underwater, which is not a natural thing, people don't normally go underwater, but since 1900,
well, not for an extended period of time anyway.
Since April 11th of 1900, the United States Navy has been doing this. This is the day April 11th is the day we bought the USS Holland from the Holland Torpedo Boat Company. And from that day forward, the United States Navy has been doing submarining. This week, you'll see, if you pay attention, you'll see a lot of submarine balls being held as we celebrate the anniversary of that. We'll recall the legacy of what that little tiny boat established and how amazing it was with innovations and technological leaps that are still in use today. That's the part that just amazes people, is that for all practical purposes, it could have been a modern submarine. April also, this week in April, also reminds us that going to sea in a submarine is a dangerous business. Holland's legacy would be seen in 1963 as the Navy's newest submarine then began a test dive on the morning of April 11th, 1963, and did not surface. In recent years, we've seen other incidents and frightening close calls. We saw the Connecticut a couple of years ago. And the truth is, and this is what people don't like to hear, someday it's going to happen again. Another boat will not come to the surface. But we've been going to the depths since 1900, and this week we celebrate the United States Navy submarine service, 124 years old this week.
And we pick it up in 60 seconds on WMMB. Dave Bowman with us, and Dave Does History. Dave, you mentioned the USS Holland, the first commissioned American submarine. You referred to it as a little ship. I was at the commissioning of the Indiana at Port Canaveral a few years ago. That was anything but little. How little was the Holland?
It was pretty small, had a crew of about 8 people.
Okay.
If you ever saw a picture of it, it's not very big, maybe 30 feet long, 8-10 feet wide. I mean, it's not a very big boat, but it would contain within it a lot of technical innovations that we could spend hours talking about. In fact, I did a presentation a couple weeks ago about the Holland that was far more technical than we'll get here. But the one thing I would share with you about the Holland is that she was the first boat, the first submarine boat, to be able to dive and surface in what we call a porpoising manner. So in other words, she could nose down and nose up and through the water like that. Prior to the Holland, all submarines that had been built, the Hunley, Simon Lake's Argonaut, they all went straight down and straight back up. And in fact, Simon Lake.
Well, they were basically horizontal and they were like an elevator up and down, huh?
Pretty much. Simon Lake thought that Holland was crazy for building a submarine that could porpoise through the water. And of course, that's how we do it today. His hydrodynamic kind of fish shaped hull that was there. He put this submarine through demonstration tests. He designed it at the height of the Spanish-American War. And the idea was that we could use these submarines, these Holland submarines, to defend our coasts from the evil Spanish. Of course, they didn't do it in time. The war ended long before that. But he put on a big demonstration in March of 1898. And it so impressed the Navy and the media. The media wouldn't shut up writing about this stuff. And so the Navy ends up buying the Holland on April 11th, 1900, which is what we consider now to be the submarine birthday, April 11th, 1900. And we celebrate that going forward every year. It's just a reminder of that day. The Holland was just the beginning. It was just the start. We learned and we grew and the boats got bigger and bigger. The next boat in line, the Plunger, was just a little bit more capable. And in fact, in 1905, President Theodore Roosevelt took a dive on the Plunger, and this was in the days before the media, so it wasn't a media op. They couldn't go with him. The president of the United States gets into this steel submarine and disappears for 5 hours and comes back and is just really, you know, this is great. And later he would say that the only reason he did it, he thought it was insane, but the only reason he did it was because he has commander-in-chief, he's going to have to order people to go into these things, and he didn't feel like he could order people to do something that he had not done himself. So he actually got on a submarine and went underwater and learned about how we do that.
I'd love to go on a test run. I really would.
It's worth doing. So a few years ago, I could have helped you, but not anymore. As we learned and grew, as the submarines got bigger and more technologically advanced, as the batteries got better, you know, you talk about your EVs and stuff like that, submarines, even today, are the best example of how that technology can actually work. But certainly in World War II, they were. You had the diesel powered on the surface, the battery powered underneath. And of course, World War II saw the nadir really of submarining as far as combat goes on both sides. I mean, you had the German U-boats that proved so effective both in World War I and in World War II. And these were essentially just bigger Holland boats. That's really all they were. In the Pacific, you had the United States Navy's submarine fleet, which was responsible for over 5 million tons of Japanese shipping being sunk, by far and away the most. And when you talk about the strategic elements of the Second World War, it is the United States submarine fleet that literally blockades Japan and starves them into submission. And by the end of the war, there's not enough targets left. So the submarines are out actually plane guarding as the carriers are attacking and planes get shot down. And the pilots bail into the water. The submarines go in and pick them up. And there's very famous footage of one of the submarines, the Finback, going in and picking up a pilot who's in his little raft. They pick him up and they bring him up on deck. And it's George Herbert Walker Bush, who was rescued by a submarine. Of course, after the war, we develop nuclear power, which becomes really the apex of submarining, because now submarines can stay underwater indefinitely. And this really changes how things are done. And when you add in the teardrop shape hull to this thing, submarines become extraordinarily fast. They become much deeper diving. Although people ask me all the time, Dave, how deep can submarines go? I don't feel comfortable discussing it, but I can tell you that a Type 21 U-boat during World War II had a design depth of about 1,000 feet deep. And that was during World War II. So these submarines are getting better. And of course, in 1960, we added into this the element of the ballistic missile submarine, like we talked about in the first hour. The George Washington was a ballistic missile submarine. And these are submarines that carry nuclear weapons. They become the element of our defense system, which gives us the ability to deter attacks on the United States. And that's what I ended up doing during my time. I served aboard USS Michigan, which is a ballistic missile submarine designed to carry those weapons that allow the United States to deter anyone from attacking us. And today, there are still 14 of those sailing the oceans, plus four SSGNs of the Ohio-class submarine.
And we've got more as we continue on Bill Mick Live. Dave's going to take us under the sea when we come back.
Joins us for our weekly dive into history. Pay attention, there will be a test. Nah, there won't be a test, but you will be held accountable. Bill Mick Live.
Richmond Transmission and Auto Service, this hour, sponsor the program as Dave does history in our third hour of a Tuesday every week. And this week we're doing the history of the American submarine fleet. Dave, we've got through World War II and moving forward here. Where are we going next? By the way, links to Dave's stuff at BillMick.com on the show page today. The headline there, Trump's call on abortion. Links to Dave Bowman and his show and the Dave Does History bibliography there for you. What's up next, Dave?
So it's hard to compress 124 years of history, especially some of the proud history that we have in the submarine fleet, into 34 minutes, but we're trying here. But really, what I want to focus on is the two events that make this week of particular importance to submarines, submariners in the United States Navy. And that, of course, is the Holland, which is our birth date. And we trace a lineage back to the Holland. I mean, if you took the crew of the Holland and who they trained and then who those guys trained and then who those guys trained, you can trace that lineage all the way back to April 11th, 1900 from today. Which is, you know, that's something to be very proud of and something that we are very proud of. But it was also this day, April 9th in 1963, that the USS Thresher pulled away from the docks there in Portsmouth and headed out to sea for sea trials. Now, the Thresher was at that point, the newest attack submarine, nuclear attack submarine in the United States Navy. She was a brand new design. The Navy had finally figured out how to build submarines that were designed to attack other submarines. They built and designed the Thresher class submarine around its sonar. So the first thing they did was they designed the sonar and they said, okay, let's build a ship around that sonar so that it can be deep diving, fast, quiet, and a pretty good attack, you know, thing that the opponents, who, let's be honest, was the Soviets, will never see coming. The Thresher was so radically designed and so new to what we were doing in the world of submarining, again, keeping a lot of those Holland innovations in place, that the Navy really didn't know what they had. They put her through a year of sea trials, a year of going, you know, doing what she can. Then they put her through, so every Navy ship class goes through this, called shock testing, which is where they put her out in the water and they basically drop depth charges and bombs around her to see how badly they can shake her up. How is she going to handle things? As we would later learn, the Thresher at that point, 1963, was subjected to the most shock trial that the Navy had ever done. No ship had ever gone through what she went through. And of course, it caused a lot of damage. Now, the commander of the Thresher would say later that it was nothing they couldn't handle. But the biggest problem that they had was, quote, unisolatable flooding, meaning water was coming into what we call the people tank. This is a problem. Now, they happened to be on the surface, so it wasn't that big of a deal. But had they been deep, it could have been. Following the shock testing, the Thresher went back into the yards for about a year's worth of repair work, upgrades, and the likes of that. And of course, when everything was said and done, you got to take her back out and test her again. So it was this day, April 9th, 1963, that she headed back out to sea with her crew, plus a bunch of civilian tech reps who had worked on her and helped put her back together. 129 souls aboard that ship. As they went out to sea, they were met by an escort ship called the Skylark, and they proceeded out to the deeper water off New England, where they were going to conduct the deep diving tests. And on the morning of April 10th, 1963, Thresher dove beneath the waves, and that was the last time she would ever see the sun.
Wow. We talk more on the story in just a moment. So the Thresher goes down, doesn't come back up. And is there speculation it was repair work? Were there other things going on that we didn't know about, Dave? What is it?
So here's the point where we have to be careful. As Admiral Rickover, Hyman Rickover, will later say, the only people that actually know what happened are gone. We don't know. There is as much speculation about what happened aboard Thresher as there are submariners. Everybody has their own ideas. There's some facts that we have, which is that she communicated with the Skylark that she was having, quote, minor difficulties, unquote, was attempting to deballast what we call an emergency blow. It didn't work. This was a design flaw that we later discovered when we tested it on some submarines on the surface. The emergency blow system did not work, so she could not deballast and couldn't get up. She obviously lost propulsion. The reactor either scrammed, something happened. She did not have propulsion, and she was very deep. She was near her design depth. Test depth, not design depth. And losing propulsion at depth is a problem because these submarines were not naturally buoyant. So since they couldn't deballast, even though they're not moving, the ship is slowly sinking. And unless you can get propulsion back and drive her back up, or you can deballast, eventually you're going to hit a point where bad things happen. What we know is that around 9:20 in the morning, there was a low frequency, high energy event. Think about the Titan submersible and the sounds that they heard. But keep in mind that these were people who were very familiar with World War II. They had sunk lots of German U-boats during the war. They knew what they were hearing when they heard the Thresher implode and break up. And it took, you know, several hours for everybody to get together and figure out what was going on. There's a lot of discussion about what happened, a lot of theories about what happened. Here's what I know. The Navy subjected the Thresher to the worst shock testing they had ever tried. And then they sent her back to sea We did not have a sub-safe program at that point. It came out of this. And I tell people this, there's a film called Ice Station Zebra. The premise is ridiculous where the ship, the torpedo tube comes open and the ship is going down. But the scene in control where Rock Hudson is the captain, and as the ship is going down, they know what's coming. And the helmsman is saying a prayer, and the captain puts his hand on his shoulder and he says, "Do you mind, son? We're trying to think." And I just, every year, I have that same nightmare about this whole thing because I just know that that's what happened to Thresher. They knew what was coming. They absolutely knew what was coming. And they tried everything they could, everything that the training had carried them to, everything that they, the 63 years of submarining had taught us. But nothing worked. We'll never know for certain what happened. As I said, every submariner in the world has their theory about it. But we know this. I know that they knew what was coming, and we know that they didn't come back. And that's a tragedy. But it's a tragedy that we learned from, and we hopefully, we cross our fingers, won't repeat.
So, just about 10 seconds here. No pre-dive testing of the ballast system wasn't going to work, huh?
Not back then. Nobody knew that it didn't work.
Back in a moment.
There's no time like the present. Call Bill now at 321-768-1240.
Richmond Transmission and Auto Service, this hour's sponsor, as Dave does history on Bill Mick Live. Time to get your calls in and thoughts on the history of these submarines. And Dave, you've got a little more ground to cover before we get to those phones. What's up here?
You know, it's like I started. The ocean is always trying to kill you. And if you're not careful, it will. And I will spend a lot of time this week thinking about Thresher and recalling Thresher and the Scorpion that was also lost, the other nuclear submarine that was lost. And it's just a reminder to us and to you as well as sometimes things just don't go right. I don't think that the crew of the Thresher did anything wrong. I think technology conspired against them. There were some design flaws, and the ocean is always trying to kill you. And if you leave it an opening, it will. I've been there myself where we had a casualty that caused us to lose propulsion. Fortunately, we had just enough to, and we weren't too deep. We had just enough propulsion to be able to drive to the surface and then sit on the surface. And it was a very nerve-wracking evening, and an evening that we kind of celebrate, not as a second birthday, but as a, you know, Halloween has special meaning to me. And it's not because spirits and candy and that kind of stuff. It's because it was a night that we could have died, but we didn't. You see this training, as we talked about, from Holland all the way down to today, that so-and-so trained me and that person trained you and you trained somebody else. And all the way down, we talked about the Connecticut a couple of years ago with her accident. Now, her accident was appalling. It was hubris. It was being stupid. But at the same time, they brought that ship back. And to that degree, that training, that ability that we've developed since April 11th of 1900 played a role in that. And when you talk about the history of submarines, and there are books and there are films and there are any number of ways you can do this, there's a lot there to learn. But it was learned at a cost, and that cost was tremendous. We lost 52 submarines during World War II, most of them with the entire crew. I think there were 129 survivors who ended up as prisoners of war, but the rest of them went down with their ships. And when we've lost two submarines, two nuclear submarines since then. And of course, we lost boats before the war and a couple of diesel boats after that. That loss of life, those deeds of those men, are what remind us every day of how difficult of a thing this was and how important it was and how meaningful that mission was and remains today to protect the sea lanes of communication and to deter attack against the United States. And for 124 years, your United States Submarine Force, of which I was a small part, have been out there doing it, and they will be tomorrow. And from what I understand, you guys down there, you're near Port Canaveral. You can see them on a regular basis pulling in and out of there. So go down and check them out and buy them a beer next time you see them at a bar.
That's a good idea. We continue. Your questions and comments for Dave Bowman, 60 seconds away, 321-768-1240 when we come back. Submarines and the history thereof with Dave Bowman on Bill Mick Live. Let's get to line one. Good morning. You're up first in this segment. Tell me what you think.
This is Steve from Melbourne.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah, I've actually pulled into Canaveral on the Sunfish, and I don't think we did on the Sturgeon. I was on five nuclear submarines, so I was in almost 22 years. Went on two West Packs, two Mediterranean runs, and two Northern runs. One of the most scary things is going into the North Sea. Because we lost our submerged envelope, you have areas that you can be underwater. It's like traffic control type thing. And we had lost that because we had a reactor problem. We were on the surface with 30-foot waves.
Ooh.
Problem with a 30-foot wave is the top of the hull's I think it was like 29 feet. The top of the sail. But the sail being open, and we went down to 44 feet. So we had 10 feet of water over our hatch that was open with people in it. That was one of the scariest times in my life.
I didn't
think we were going to recover from that. So
where were you at in your point of service? How long had you been in and serving on a submarine when that happened, Steve?
About 12 years back, so about 10 years.
So you still had more than half your career ahead of you, and you stayed. Congratulations.
Yeah, that was something. But going, what we had done wasn't natural either. Take that whole thing about being in a submarine that's closed in, that's underwater. Now put that submarine underneath the North Atlantic ice pack.
Oh, I can imagine.
And there ain't nobody coming to get you because you're by yourself.
Yeah, it's got to be something. Steve, thanks for sharing the story. Line two, you're on Bill Mick Live. Good morning.
Good morning. Is it me?
Yes. Who's this?
Hi, this is Rich in Satellite Beach.
Yeah, Rich.
I just wanted to bring up an event that Dave probably knows well about, the Russian sub, the Kursk, that sank. In 2000 on the Barents Sea, it imploded, and we had buoys that triangulated its location, and we built a ship specifically designed to recover the submarine without detection by the Soviets. I just wanted to tickle Dave to get whatever information he had on it.
Dave?
For taking my call.
You bet, Rich.
You know, if you go back far enough in Dave Does History on Bill Mick Live, we told that story when we talked about Richard Nixon going to China and deterrence. We talked about that, and it wasn't the Kursk. The Kursk was lost in the 2000s up in the Barents Sea, but the K-129 was a Gulf-class ballistic missile submarine, and we did a whole show on that, Bill.
Yeah, I remember us talking about it. It was good, too. So, let's go to line three. You're up on Bill Mick Live. Good morning.
Good morning, Mario, Cape Canaveral.
Yeah, Mario.
I was about 12 or 13 years old when the Thresher went down, and I heard about it for years. It was a gigantic story, and it just wouldn't go away. Years and years and years, they kept talking about, you know, all kinds of specials on TV and books written and so forth and so on. The are you writing a book on submarines? You should be.
I am not writing a book on submarines, and I will tell you why. When I got out of the Navy because of my job at the time, I held a top secret PSYOP ESI clearance. And as part of my discharge, I was compelled to sign a non-disclosure agreement that does not expire. So really, what would I write about? I mean, it was, frankly, it's like anything else. It was hours and hours and hours of boredom followed by 10 seconds of excitement.
And we'll never hear about the UFOs that Dave saw underwater. Line four, you're on Bill Mick Live. Good morning.
This is William from Melbourne.
Yeah, William.
I got two questions. One, number one, both of them for Dave. Number one, do you sign up for submarine service when you enlist? And the other one is, are any of the nuclear missiles, have they ever been retrieved? And I'll hang up and listen to you.
Thanks, William. We appreciate it.
The answer to your first question is yes, you have to volunteer. Submarine service is all volunteer. So you have to sign up for that. Then you have to pass a physical. I have a long story about my physical, but we don't have time for that today. And I didn't catch the second question. Something about nuclear missiles.
Any of them been recovered that have been lost on any?
We haven't lost any of our missiles. We haven't lost any.
Okay.
There are.
Didn't I hear you talking about one over the weekend that was, you were halfway into a missile tube disabling one that was having a malfunction.
Yeah, it was quite the adventure, which you can hear on What the Frock if you go look that up. There are two nuclear torpedoes aboard Scorpion's wreck. And what most people don't know, I remember when Bob Ballard found the Titanic in 1985? The search for the Titanic was the cover story for his using all that new equipment to investigate the wrecks of Thresher and Scorpion. So that's the first rule of espionage. Is the cover story has to be true. And in his particular case, he just happened to find the Titanic with the equipment that he used already to investigate the wrecks of Scorpion and Thresher and make sure that the reactor vessels were still safe.
Interesting. Line five, you're up with Dave Bowman. Good morning.
Good morning. It's Larry in Melbourne.
Yeah, Larry.
I got two quick things and an actual comment. Little story to tell for you.
Make it quick.
Dave, I hope short surgery goes good. And thanks for your time, Dave. And there's on the spin back there, I took care of a patient that was on the ship, and he said that George Bush every year sent a handwritten Christmas card to all the crew members, and the entire crew was invited to his inauguration as presidency.
As I recall, they had a float, but that may just be in my memory. But yes, he did.
I thought it was a cool story.
Hey, thanks much. We appreciate that. Line one, you're up on Bill Mick Live. Good morning.
Hey, my name's John. I was Air Force, but I've got a story where Air Force and Navy submarines cooperated. My buddy was a tail gunner on a B-52, and during a typhoon out of Guam, the aircraft stalled and crashed into the ocean. The crew was rescued by a submarine in typhoon conditions. I thought if anybody knew that story, I could tell you something about it.
David, you heard that one?
Yeah, that's a very well-known story. The USS Gannard was involved with that. So was the Barb. There were a couple of actual submarines involved with that. But yeah, and during World War II, that's something that we learned to do very well was rescue aviators. And they continued that even with B-52s. So, and they would probably do it today if they had to.
Very good. John, thank you. We appreciate it. Line two, you're up on Bill Mick Live. Good morning.
Yeah, this is Jim in West Melbourne.
Yeah, Jim.
And yes, I was wondering if you knew anything about the new Russian subs that are supposed to be very, very fast and maybe technologically much more quiet or something like that. I've heard stories about them. I don't know how true they are. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Jim. Dave, any word on what's coming out of Russia?
Well, yeah, the Russians have new submarines, and they're always they've always been bragging about them. The Russians have always had a thing for speed and depth. They like to go deep, and they like to go fast. But the problem with trade-off for that is it's also loud, which I'm sure Steve from Melbourne could tell you more about as a sonar tech. But all technology gets better. Yes, they are getting quieter. Are they getting quiet enough? I'm not as worried about them as I am the Chinese, and we'll see.
What's the reason for that? Chinese tech better? What?
No, I think we're more likely to be in conflict with China right now than we are with the Soviet stuff.
I just wondered, I thought you were going on a technical angle there. Dave Bowman, interesting hour with the history of submarines and quite a few stories. I appreciate it.
Good luck on your
circuit, my friend. We will stay in touch, and we'll get you back here just as soon as we can.
I'm looking forward to it.